had run out on the drift, leaped into the water, and crossed the river. To an experienced coon hound, the crude trick would have been nothing at all, but my dogs were just big, awkward pups trailing their first live coon. I stood and watched, wondering if they would remember the training I had given them. Now and then I would whoop, urging them on. Old Dan was having a fit. He whined and he bawled. He whimpered and cried. He came to me and reared up, begging for help. "I'm not going to help you," I scolded. "And you're not going to find him out on that drift. If you would just remember some of the training I gave you, you could find the trail. Now go find that coon." He ran back out on the drift and started searching. Little Ann came to me. I could see the pleading in her warm gray eyes. "I'm ashamed of you, little girl," I said. "I thought you had more sense than this. If you let him fool you this easily, you'll never be a coon dog." She whined, turned, and trotted downstream to search again for the lost trail. I couldn't understand. Had all the training I had given them been useless? I knew if I waded the river they would follow me. Once on the other side, it would be easy for them to find the trail. I didn't want it that way. I wanted them to figure it out by themselves. The more I thought about it, the more disgusted I became. I sat down and buried my face in my arms. Out on the drift, old Dan started whining. It made me angry, and I got up to scold him again. I couldn't understand his actions. He was running along the edge of the drift, whimpering and staring downriver. I looked that way. I could see something swimming for the opposite shore. At first, I thought it was a muskrat. In the middle of the stream, where the moonlight was the brightest, I got a good look. It was Little Ann. With a loud whoop, I told her how proud I was. My little girl had remembered her training. She came out on a gravel bar, shook the water from her body, and disappeared in the thick timber. Minutes later, she let me know she had found the trail. Before the tones of her voice had died away, old Dan plowed into the water. He was so eager to join her, I could hear him whining as he swam. As soon as his feet touched bottom in the shallows, he started bawling and lunging. White sheets of water, knocked high in the moonlight by his churning feet, gleamed like thousands of tiny white stars. He came out of the river onto a sandbar. In his eagerness, his feet slipped in the loose sand, and down he went. He came out of his roll, running and bawling. Ahead of him was a log jam. He sailed over it and disappeared down the riverbank. Seconds later, I heard his deep voice blend with the sharp cries of Little Ann. At that moment, no boy in the world could have been more proud of his dogs than I was. Never again would I doubt them. I was hurrying along looking for a shallow riffle so I could wade across when the voices of my dogs stopped. I waited and listened. They opened again on my side of the stream. The coon had crossed back over. I couldn't help smiling. I knew that never again would a ringtail fool them by swimming the river. The next trick the old fellow pulled was dandy. He climbed a large water oak standing about 10 feet from the river and simply disappeared. I got there in time to see my dogs swimming for the opposite shore. For half an hour, they worked that bank. Not finding the trail, they swam back. I stood and watched them. They practically tore the riverbank to pieces looking for the trail. Old Dan knew the coon had climbed the water oak. He went back, reared up on it, and bawled a few times. "There's no use doing that, boy," I said. "I know he climbed it, but he's not there now. Maybe it's like Grandpa said. He just climbed right on out through the top and disappeared in the stars." My dogs didn't know it, but I was pretty well convinced that that was what the coon had done. They wouldn't give up. Once again, they crossed over to the other shore. It was no use. The coon hadn't touched that bank. They came back. Old Dan went up the river and Little Ann worked downstream. An hour and a half later, they gave up and came to me begging for help. I knelt down between their wet bodies. While I scratched and petted them, I let them know that I still loved them. "I'm not mad," I said. "I know you did your best. If that coon can fool both of us, then we're just beat. We'll go someplace else to hunt. He's not the only coon in these bottoms." Just as I picked up my axe and lantern, Little Ann let out a bawl and tore out down the riverbank. Old Dan, with a bewildered look on his face, stood for a moment looking after her. Then, raising his head high in the air, he made my eardrums ring with his deep voice. I could hear the underbrush popping as he ran to join her. I couldn't figure out what had taken place. Surely Little Ann had heard or seen something. I could tell by their voices that whatever it was they were after, they were close enough to see it and were probably running by sight. The animal left the bottoms and headed for the mountains. Whatever it was, it must have realized my dogs were crowding it too closely. At the edge of the foothills, it turned and came back toward the river. I was still trying to figure out what was going on when I realized that on striking the river, the animal had again turned and was coming straight toward me. I set my lantern down and tightened my grip on the axe. I was standing my ground quite well when visions of bears, lions, and all kinds of other animals started flashing across my mind. I jumped behind a big sycamore and was trying hard to press my body into the tree when a big coon came tearing by. 25 yards behind him came my dogs, running side by side. I saw them clearly when they passed me, bawling every time their feet touched the ground. After seeing that there was nothing to be scared of, once again I was the fearless hunter, screaming and yelling as loud as I could, "Get 'em, boy, get 'em!" I tore out after them. The trails I knew so well were forgotten. I took off straight through the brush. I was tearing my way through some elders when the voices of my dogs stopped. Holding my breath, I stood still and waited. Then it came, the long, drawn-out bawl of the tree bark. My little hounds had done it. They had treed their first coon. When I came to them and saw what they had done, I was speechless. I groaned and closed my eyes. I didn't want to believe it. There were a lot of big sycamores in the bottoms, but the one in which my dogs had treed was the giant of them all. While prowling the woods, I had seen the big tree many times. I had always stopped and admired it. Like a king in his own domain, it towered far above the smaller trees. It had taken me quite a while to find a name suitable for the big sycamore. For a while I had called it the chicken tree. In some ways it had reminded me of a mother hen hovering over her young in a rainstorm, its huge limbs spread out over the small birch, ash, box elder, and water oak, as if it alone were their protector. Next I named it the giant. That name didn't last long. Mama told us children a story about a big giant that lived in the mountains and ate little children that were lost. Right away I started looking for another name. One day, while lying in the warm sun, staring at its magnificent beauty, I found the perfect name. From that day on, it was called the Big Tree. I named the bottoms around it the Big Tree Bottoms. Walking around it and using the moon as a light, I started looking for the coon. High up in the top, I saw a hollow in the end of a broken limb. I figured that that was the coon's den. I could climb almost any tree I had ever seen, but I knew I could never climb the big sycamore, and it would take days to chop it down. There had been very little hope from the beginning, but on seeing the hollow, I gave up. "Come on," I said to my dogs. "There's nothing I can do. We'll go someplace else and find another coon." I turned to walk away. My hounds made no move to follow. They started whining. Old Dan reared up, placed his front paws on the trunk, and started bawling. "I know he's there," I said, "but there's nothing I can do. I can't climb it. Why, it's 60 feet up to the first limb, and it would take me a month to cut it down." Again I turned and started on my way. Little Anne came to me. She reared up and started licking my hands. Swallowing the knot in my throat, I said, "I'm sorry, little girl. I want him just as badly as you do, but there's no way I can get him." She ran back to the tree and started digging in the soft ground close to the roots. "Come on now," I said in a gruff voice. "You're both acting silly. You know I'd get the coon for you if I could, but I can't." With a whipped dog look on her face and with her tail between her legs, little Anne came over. She wouldn't even look at me. Old Dan walked slowly around behind the tree and hid himself. He peeped around the big trunk and looked at me. The message I read in his friendly eyes tore at my heart. He seemed to be saying, "You told us to put one in a tree, and you would do the rest." With tears in my eyes, I looked again at the big sycamore. A wave of anger came over me. Gritting my teeth, I said, "I don't care how big you are. I'm not going to let my dogs down. I told them if they put a coon in a tree, I would do the rest, and I'm going to. I'm going to cut you down. I don't care if it takes me a whole year. I walked over and sank my axe as deep as I could in the smooth white bark. My dogs threw a fit. Little Ann started turning in circles. I could hear her pleased, whimpering cry. Old Dan bawled and started gnawing on the big tree's trunk. At first it was easy. My axe was sharp and the chips flew. 2 hours later, things were different. My arms felt like two dead grapevines, and my back felt like someone had pulled a plug out of one end of it and drained all the sap out. While taking a breather, I saw I was making more progress than I thought I would. The cut I had started was a foot deep, but I still had a long way to go. Sitting on their rears, my dogs waited and watched. I smiled at the look on their faces. Every time I stopped chopping, they would come over. While little Ann washed the sweat from my face, old Dan would inspect my work. He seemed to be pleased with what he saw, for he always wagged his tail. Along about daylight, I got my second wind, and I really did make the chips fly. This burst of energy cost me dearly. By sunup, I was so stiff I could hardly move. My hands and arms were numb. My back screamed with pain. I could go no further. Sitting down, I leaned back against the big tree and fell asleep. Little Ann woke me up by washing my face. I groaned with the torture of getting to my feet. Every muscle in my body seemed to be tied in a knot. I was thinking of going down to the river to wash my face in the cool water when I heard a loud whoop. I recognized my father's voice. I whooped to let him know where I was. Papa was riding on Red Mule. After he rode up, he just sat there and looked me over. He glanced at my dogs and at the big sycamore. I saw the worry leave his face. He straightened his shoulders, pursed his lips, and blew out a little air. He reminded me of someone who had just dropped a heavy load. In a slow, calm voice, he asked, "Are you all right, Billy?"
"Yes, Papa," I said. "Oh, I'm a little tired and sleepy. Otherwise, I'm fine."
He slid from the mule's back and came over. "Your mother's worried," he said. "When you didn't come in, we didn't know what had happened. You should have come home."
I didn't know what to say. I bowed my head and looked at the ground. I was trying hard to choke back the tears when I felt his hand on my shoulder.
"I'm not scolding," he said. "We just thought maybe you had an accident or something."
I looked up and saw a smile on his face. He turned and looked again at the tree.
"Say," he said, "this is the sycamore you call a big tree, isn't it?"
I nodded my head.
"Is there a coon in it?" he asked.
"There sure is, Papa," I said. "He's in that hollow limb. See? That one? Way up there? That's why I couldn't come home. I was afraid he'd get away."
"Maybe you just think he's there," Papa said. "I believe I'd make sure before I'd cut down a tree that big."
"Oh, he's there, all right," I said. "My dogs went 10 feet behind him when he went up it."
"Why are you so determined to get this coon?" Papa asked. "Couldn't you go somewhere else and tree one? Maybe the tree would be a smaller one."
"I thought about that, Papa," I said. "But I made a bargain with my dogs. I told them that if they would put one in a tree, I'd do the rest. Well, they fulfilled their part of the bargain. Now it's up to me to do my part. And I'm going to, Papa. I'm going to cut it down. I don't care if it takes me a year."
Papa laughed and said, "Oh, I don't think it'll take that long, but it will take a while. I'll tell you what I'll do. You take the mule and go get some breakfast. I'll chop on it until you get back."
"No, Papa," I said. "I don't want any help. I want to cut it down all by myself. You see, if someone helps me, I wouldn't feel like I kept my part of the agreement."
An astonished look came over my father's face. "Why, Billy," he said, "you can't stay down here without anything to eat and no sleep. Besides, it'll take at least 2 days to cut that tree down, and that's hard work."
"Please, Papa," I begged, "don't make me quit. I just have to get that coon. If I don't, my dogs won't ever believe in me again."
Papa didn't know what to tell me. He scratched his head, looked over to my dogs and back at me. He started walking around. I waited for him to make up his mind. He finally reached a decision. "Well, all right," he said. "If that's the way you want it, I'm for it, even if it is only an agreement between you and your dogs. If a man's word isn't any good, he's no good himself. Now, I have to get back and tell your mother that you're all right. It's a cinch that you can't do that kind of work on an empty stomach, so I'll send your oldest sister down with a lunch bucket.
With tears in my eyes, I said, "Tell Mama I'm sorry for not coming home last night."
"Don't you worry about your mother," he said, as he climbed on the mule's back. "I'll take care of her. Another thing, I have to make a trip to the store today, and I'll talk this over with your grandfather. He may be able to help some way."
After Papa left, things were a little different. The tree didn't look as big, and my axe wasn't as heavy. I even managed to sing a little as I chopped away. When my sister came with a lunch bucket, I could have kissed her, but I didn't. She took one look at the big tree, and her blue eyes got as big as a guinea's egg.
"You're crazy," she gasped. "Absolutely crazy. Why, it'll take a month to cut that tree down, and off an old coon."
I was so busy with the fresh side pork, fried eggs, and hot biscuits, I didn't pay much attention to her. After all, she was a girl, and girls don't think like boys do. She raved on.
"You can't possibly cut it down today. And what are you going to do when it gets dark?" "I'm going to keep right on chopping," I said. "I stayed with it last night, didn't I? Well, I'll stay till it's cut down. I don't care how long it takes."
My sister got upset. She looked at me, threw back her small head, and looked up at the top of the big sycamore.
"You're as crazy as a bedbug," she said. "Why, I never heard of such a thing."
She stepped over in front of me and very seriously asked if she could look in my eyes.
"Look in my eyes?" I said. "What do you want to do that for? I'm not sick." "Yes, you are, Billy," she said. "Very sick. Mama said when old man Johnson went crazy, his eyes turned green. I want to see if yours have."
This was too much. "If you don't get out of here," I shouted, "you're going to be red instead of green, and I mean that." I grabbed up a stick and started toward her. Of course, I wouldn't have hit her for anything. This scared her, and she started for the house. I heard her saying something about an old coon as she disappeared in the underbrush.
Down in the bottom of my lunch bucket, I found a neat little package of scraps for my dogs. While they were eating, I walked down to a spring and filled the bucket with cool water.
The food did wonders for me. My strength came back. I spit on my hands, and whistling a coon hunter's tune, I started making the chips fly. The cut grew so big I could have laid down in it. I moved over to another side and started a new one. Once, while I was taking a rest, old Dan came over to inspect my work. He hopped up in the cut and sniffed around.
"You had better get out of there," I said. "If that tree takes a notion to fall, it'll mash you flatter'n a tadpole's tail."
With a no-care look on his friendly face, he gave me a hurry-up signal with a wag of his tail. Little Ann had dug a bed in a pile of dead leaves. She looked as if she were asleep, but I knew she wasn't. Every time I stopped swinging the axe, she would raise her head and look at me.
By late evening, the happy tune I had been whistling was forgotten. My back throbbed like a stone bruise. The muscles in my legs and arms started quivering and jerking. I couldn't gulp enough air to cool the burning heat in my lungs. My strength was gone. I could go no further. I sat down and called my dogs to me. With tears in my eyes, I told them that I just couldn't cut the big tree down.
I was trying hard to make them understand when I heard someone coming. It was Grandpa in his buggy. I'm sure no one in the world can understand a young boy like his grandfather can. He drove up with a twinkle in his eyes and a smile on his whiskery old face.
"Hello, how you getting along?" he boomed.
"Not so good, Grandpa," I said. "I don't think I can cut it down. It's just too big. I guess I'll have to give up."
"Give up?" Grandpa barked. "Now, I don't want to hear you say that. No, sir, that's the last thing I want to hear. Don't ever start anything you can't finish."
"I don't want to give up, Grandpa," I said, "but it's just too big, and my strength's gone. I'm give out."
"Course you are," he said. "You've been going at it wrong. To do work like that, a fella needs plenty of rest and food in his stomach."
"How am I going to get that, Grandpa?" I asked. "I can't leave the tree. If I do, the coon will get away."
"No, he won't," Grandpa said. "That's what I came down here for. I'll show you how to keep that coon in the tree."
He walked around the big sycamore, looking up. He whistled and said,
"Boy, this is a big one, all right."
"Yes, it is, Grandpa," I said. "It's the biggest one in the river bottoms." Grandpa started chuckling.
"That's all right," he said. "The bigger they are, the harder they fall."
"How are you going to make a coon stay in the tree, Grandpa?" I asked.
With a proud look on his face, he said, "That's another one of my coon hunting tricks. Learned it when I was a boy. We'll keep him there, all right. Oh, I don't mean we can keep him there for always, but he'll stay for 4 or 5 days. That is, until he gets so hungry he just has to come down."
"I don't need that much time," I said. "I'm pretty sure I can have it down by tomorrow night." Grandpa looked at the cut.
"I don't know," he said. "Even though it is halfway down, you must remember you've been cutting on it half one night and one day. You might make it, but it's going to take a lot of chopping."
"If I get a good night's sleep," I said, "and a couple of meals under my belt, I can do a lot of chopping."
Grandpa laughed. "Speaking of meals," he said, "your ma is having chicken and dumplings for supper. Now, we don't want to miss that, so let's get busy."
"What do you want me to do, Grandpa?" I asked.
"Well, let's see," he said. "First thing we'll need is some sticks about 5 feet long. Take your axe, go over in that canebrake, and get us 6 of them."
I hurried to do what Grandpa wanted, all the time, wondering what in the world he was going to do. How could he keep the coon in the tree? When I came back, he was taking some old clothes from the buggy.
"Take this stocking cap," he said. "Fill it about half full of grass and leaves."
While I was doing this, Grandpa walked over and started looking up in the tree.
"You're pretty sure he's in that hollow limb, are you?" he asked.
"He's there, all right, Grandpa," I said. "There's no other place he could be. I've looked all over it, and there's no other hollow anywhere."
"Well, in that case," Grandpa said, "we better put our man along about here."
"What man, Grandpa?" I asked in surprise.
"The one we're going to make," he said. "To us it'll be a scarecrow, but to that coon it'll be a man."
Knowing too well how smart coons were, right away I began to lose confidence. "I don't see how anything like that can keep a coon in a tree," I said.
"It'll keep him there all right," Grandpa said. "Like I told you before, they're curious little devils. He'll poke his head out from that hole, see this man standing there, and he won't dare come down. It'll take him 4 or 5 days to figure out that it isn't a real honest-to-goodness man. By that time, it'll be too late. You'll have his hide tacked on the smokehouse wall."
The more I thought about it, the more I believed it. And then there was that serious look on Grandpa's face. That was all it took. I was firmly convinced. I started laughing. The more I thought about it, the funnier it got. Great big laughing tears rolled down my cheek.
"What's so funny?" Grandpa asked. "Don't you believe it'll work?"
"Sure it'll work, Grandpa," I said. "I know it will. I was just thinking, those coons aren't half as smart as they think they are they?" We both had a good laugh at this. With the sticks and some baling wire, Grandpa made a frame that looked almost like a gingerbread man. On this, he put an old pair of pants and a red sweater. We stuffed the loose, flabby clothes with grass and leaves. He wired the stocking cap head in place and stepped back to inspect his work.
"Well, what do you think of it?" he asked.
"If it had a face," I said, "you couldn't tell it from a real man."
"We can fix that," Grandpa chuckled.
He took a stick and dug some black grease from one of the hubcaps on the buggy. I stood and watched while he applied his artistic touch. In the stocking cap head, he made 2 mean-looking eyes, a crooked nose, and the ugliest mouth I had ever seen.
"Well, what do you think of that?" he asked. "Looks pretty good, huh?"
Laughing fit to kill and talking all at the same time, I told him that I wouldn't blame the coon if he stayed in the tree until Gabriel blew his horn.
"He won't stay that long," Grandpa chuckled, "but he'll stay long enough for you to cut that tree down."
"That's all I want," I said.
"We better be going," Grandpa said. "It's getting late, and we don't want to miss that supper."
I was so stiff and sore, he had to help me to the buggy seat. I called to my dogs. Little Ann came, but not willingly. Old Dan refused to leave the tree. "Come on, boy," I coaxed. "Let's go home and get something to eat. We'll come back tomorrow." He bowed his head and looked the other way. "Come on," I scolded. "We can't sit here all night." This hurt his feelings. He walked around behind the big sycamore and hid.
Well, I'll be darned, Grandpa said as he jumped down from the buggy. He knows that coon's there, and he doesn't want to leave it. You got a coon hound there, and I mean a good one.
He picked old Dan up in his arms and set him in the buggy. All the way home, I had to hold on to his collar to keep him from jumping out and going back to the tree. As our buggy wound its way up through the bottoms, Grandpa started talking.
You know, Billy, he said, about this tree chopping of yours, I think it's all right. In fact, I think it would be a good thing if all young boys had to cut down a big tree like that once in their life. It does something for them. It gives them determination and willpower. That's a good thing for a man to have. It goes a long way in his life. The American people have a lot of it. They have proved that all down through history. But they could do with a lot more of it.
I couldn't see this determination and willpower that Grandpa was talking about very clearly. All I could see was a big sycamore tree, a lot of chopping, and the hide of a ringtail coon that I was determined to have. As we reached the house, Mama came out. Right away, she started checking me over. Are you all right? She asked. Sure, Mama, I said. What makes you think something's wrong with me? Well, I didn't know, she said. The way you acted when you got down from the buggy, I thought maybe you were hurt.
Oh, he's just a little sore and stiff from all that chopping, Grandpa said. But he'll be all right. I'll soon go away.
After Mama saw that there were no broken bones or legs chopped off, she smiled and said, I never know anymore. I guess I'll just have to get used to it. Papa hollered from the porch,
Come on in. We've been waiting supper on you.
We're having chicken and dumplings, Mama beamed, and I cooked them especially for you.
During the meal, I told Grandpa I didn't think that the coon in the big tree was the same one my dogs had been trailing at first.
What makes you think that? He asked.
I told how the coon had fooled us, and how little Ann had seen or heard this other coon. I figured he had just walked up on my dogs before he realized it.
A smile spread all over Grandpa's face. Chuckling, he said, It does look that way, but it wasn't. No, Billy, it was the same coon. They're much too smart to ever walk up on a hound like that. He pulled a trick, and it was a good one. In fact, it'll fool 9 out of 10 dogs.
Well, what did he do, Grandpa? I asked. I'm pretty sure he didn't cross the river, so how did he work it?
Grandpa pushed the dishes back, and using his fork as a pencil, he drew an imaginary line on the tablecloth.
It's called the backtracking trick, he said. Here's how he worked it. He climbed that water oak, but he only went up about 15 or 20 feet. He then turned around and came down in his same tracks. He backtracked on his original trail for a way. When he heard your dogs coming, he leaped far up on the side of the nearest tree and climbed up. He was in that tree all the time your dogs were searching for the lost trail. After everything had quieted down, he figured that they had given up. That's when he came down, and that's when little Ann either heard or saw him.
Pointing the fork at me, Grandpa said very seriously,
You mark my word, Billy. In no time at all, that little Ann will know every trick a coon can pull.
You know, Grandpa, I said, she wouldn't bark treed at the water oak like old Dan did.
Course she wouldn't, he said. She knew he wasn't there.
Why, I never heard of such a thing, Mama said. I'd no idea coons were that smart. Why, for all anyone knows, he may not be in the big tree at all. Maybe he pulled another trick. It'd be a shame if Billy cut it down and found there was no coon in it. Oh, he's there, Mama, I hastily replied. I know he is. They were right on his tail when he went up. Besides, little Ann was bawling her head off when I came to them.
Of course he's there, Grandpa said. They were crowding him too closely. He didn't have time to pull another trick.
Grandpa left soon after supper, saying to me,
I'll be back down in a few days, and I want to see that coon hide.
I thanked him for helping me and walked out to the buggy with him.
Oh, I almost forgot, he said. I heard there was a fad back in the New England states. Seems like everyone is going crazy over coon skin coats. Now, if this is true, I look for the price of coon hides to take a jump.
I was happy to hear this and told my father what Grandpa had said. Papa laughed and said,
Well, if you can keep the coons out of those big sycamores, you might make a little money.
Before I went to bed, Mama made me take a hot bath. Then she rubbed me all over with some liniment that burned like fire and smelled like a civet cat. It seemed like I had barely closed my eyes when Mama woke me up. "Breakfast is about ready, Billy," she said. I was so stiff and sore I had trouble putting my clothes on. Mama helped me. "Maybe you better let that coon go," she said. "I don't think he's worth all of this." "I can't do that, Mama," I said. "I've gone too far now."
Papa came in from the barn.
"What's the matter?" he asked. "You a little stiff?"
"A little stiff?" Mama exclaimed. "Why, he could hardly put his clothes on."
"Ah, he'll be all right," Papa said. "If I know anything about swinging an axe, it won't be long before he's as limber as a rag."
Mama just shook her head and started putting our breakfast on the table. While we were eating, Papa said,
"You know, I woke up several times last night, and each time I was sure I heard a hound bawling. Sounded like old Dan."
I quit the table on the run and headed for my doghouse. I didn't have to go all the way. Little Ann met me on the porch. I asked her where old Dan was and called his name. He was nowhere around. Little Ann started acting strangely. She whined and stared toward the river bottoms. She ran out to the gate, came back, and reared up on me. Mama and Papa came out on the porch.
"He's not here," I said. "I think he has gone back to the tree." "I don't think he'd do that, would he?" Mama said. "Maybe he's around someplace. Have you looked in the doghouse?"
I ran and looked. He wasn't there.
"Everybody be quiet and listen," I said.
I walked out beyond the gate a little ways and whooped as loud as I could. My voice rang like a bell in the still frosty morning. Before the echo had died away, a deep of old Dan rolled out of the river bottoms.
"He's there," I said. "He wanted to make sure the coon stayed in the tree. You see, Mama, why I have to get that coon? I can't let him down." "Well, I never in all my life," she said. "I had no idea a dog loved to hunt that much."
"Yes, Billy, I can see now. And I want you to get him. I don't care if you have to cut down every tree in those bottoms. I want you to get that coon for those dogs."
"I'm gonna get him, Mama," I said. "And I'm gonna get him today, if I possibly can." Papa laughed and said, "Looks like there wasn't any use in building that scarecrow. All you had to do was tell old Dan to stay and watch the tree."
I left the house in a run. Now and then I would stop and whoop. Each time I was answered by the deep voice of old Dan. Little Ann ran ahead of me. By the time I reached the big tree, their voices were making the bottoms ring. When I came tearing out of the underbrush, old Dan threw a fit. He tried to climb the sycamore. He would back way off, then bawling and running as fast as he could, he would claw his way far up on its side. Little Ann, not to be outdone, reared up and placed her small front paws on the smooth white bark. She told the ringtail coon that she knew he was there. After they had quieted down, I called old Dan to me.
"I'm proud of you, boy," I said. "It takes a good dog to stay with a tree all night. But there wasn't any need in you coming back. The coon wouldn't have gotten away. That's why we built the scarecrow."
Little Ann came over and started rolling in the leaves. The way I was feeling toward her, I couldn't even smile at her playful mood.
"Of course you feel good," I said in an irritated voice. "And it's no wonder. You had a good night's sleep in a nice warm doghouse, but old Dan didn't. He was down here in the cold all by himself watching the tree. The way you're acting, I don't believe you care if the coon gets away or not."
I would have said more, but just then I noticed something. I walked over for a better look. There, scratched deep in the soft leaves, were two little beds. One was smaller than the other. Looking at little Ann, I read the answer in her warm gray eyes. Old Dan hadn't been alone when he had gone back to the tree. She, too, had gone along. There was no doubt that in the early morning she had come home to get me. There was a lump in my throat as I said, "I'm sorry, little girl. I should have known." The first half hour was torture. At each swing of the axe, my arms felt like they were being torn from their sockets. I gritted my teeth and kept hacking away. My body felt like it did the time my sister rolled me down the hill in a barrel. As Papa had said, in a little while the warm heat from the hard work limbered me up. I remembered what my father did when he was swinging an axe. At the completion of each swing, he always said, "Ha!" I tried it. Ka-wham! Ha!
Kawham! Ha!
I didn't know if it helped or not, but I was willing to try anything if it would hurry the job. Several times before noon, I had to stop and rake my chips out of the way. I noticed that they weren't the big, even, solid chips like my father made when he was chopping. They were small and seemed to crumble up and come all to pieces. Neither were the cuts, neat and even. They were ragged and looked more like the work of beavers. But I wasn't interested in any beautiful tree chopping. All I wanted was to hear the big sycamore start popping. Along in the middle of the afternoon, I felt a stinging in one of my hands. When I saw it was a blister, I almost cried. At first there was only one, then two. One after another, they rose up on my hands like small white marbles. They filled up and turned a pale pinkish color. When one would burst, it was all I could do to keep from screaming. I tore my handkerchief in half and wrapped my hands. This helped for a while, but when the cloth began to stick to the raw flesh, I knew it was the end. Crying my heart out, I called my dogs to me and showed them my hands. "I can't do it," I said. "I've tried, but I just can't cut it down. I can't hold the axe any longer." Little Ann whined and started licking my sore hands. Old Dan seemed to understand. He showed his sympathy by nuzzling me with his head. Broken-hearted, I started for home. As I turned, from the corner of my eye, I saw Grandpa's scarecrow. It seemed to be laughing at me. I looked over to the big sycamore. It lacked so little being cut down. A small wedge of solid wood was all that was holding it up. I let my eyes follow the smooth white trunk up to the huge spreading limbs. Sobbing, I said, "You think you have won, but you haven't. Although I can't get the coon, neither can you live, because I have cut off your breath of life." And then I thought, why kill the big tree and not accomplish anything? I began to feel bad. Kneeling down between my dogs, I cried and prayed, "Please, God, give me the strength to finish the job. I don't want to leave the big tree like that. Please, help me finish the job." I was trying to rewrap my hand so I could go back to work when I heard a low droning sound. I stood up and looked around. I could still hear the noise but couldn't locate it. I looked up. High in the top of the big sycamore, a breeze had started the limbs to swaying. A shudder ran through the huge trunk. I looked over to my right at a big black gum tree. Not one limb was moving. On its branches, a few dead leaves hung silent and still. One dropped and floated lazily toward the ground. Over on my left stood a large hackberry. I looked up to its top. It was as still as a fence post. Another gust of wind caught in the top of the big tree. It started popping and snapping. I knew it was going to fall. Grabbing my dogs by their collars, I backed off to safety. I held my breath. The top of the big sycamore rocked and swayed. There was a loud crack that seemed to come from deep inside the heavy trunk. Fascinated, I stood and watched the giant of the bottoms. It seemed to be fighting so hard to keep standing. Several times I thought it would fall, but in a miraculous way it would pull itself back into perfect balance. The wind itself seemed to be angry at the big tree's stubborn resistance. It growled and moaned as it pushed harder against the wavering top. With one final grinding, creaking sigh, the big sycamore started down. It picked up momentum as the heavy weight of the overbalanced top dove for the ground. A small ash was smothered by its huge bulk. There was a lightning-like crack as its trunk snapped. In its downward plunge, the huge limbs stripped the branches from the smaller trees. A log-sized one knifed through the top of a water oak. Splintered limbs flew skyward and rained out over the bottoms. With a cyclone roar, the big tree crashed to the ground. And then silence settled over the bottoms. Out of the broken, twisted, tangled mass streaked a brown, furry ball. I turned my dogs loose and started screaming at the top of my voice, "Get him, Dan, get him!" In his eagerness, old Dan ran head-on into a bur oak tree. He sat down and with his deep voice told the river bottoms that he had been hurt. It was little Ann who caught the coon. I heard the ringtail squall when she grabbed him. Scared half to death, I snatched up a club and ran to help her. The coon was all over her. He climbed up on her head, growling, slashing, ripping, and tearing. Yelping with pain, she shook him off, and he streaked for the river. I thought surely he was going to get away. At the very edge of the river's bank, she caught him again. I was trying hard to get in a lick with my club, but couldn't for fear of hitting little Ann. Through the tears in my eyes, I saw the red, blurry form of old Dan sail into the fight. He was a mad hound. His anger at the bur oak tree was taken out on the coon. They stretched old Ringy out between them and pinned him to the ground. It was savage and brutal. I could hear the dying squalls of the coon and the deep growls of old Dan. In a short time, it was all over. With sorrow in my heart, I stood and watched while my dogs worried the lifeless body. Little Ann was satisfied first. I had to scold old Dan to make him stop. Carrying the coon by a hind leg, I walked back to the big tree for my axe. Before leaving for home, I stood and looked at the fallen sycamore. I should have felt proud over the job I had done, but for some reason I couldn't. I knew I would miss the giant of the bottoms, for it had played a wonderful part in my life. I thought of the hours I had whiled away staring at its beauty and how hard it had been finding the right name for it. "I'm sorry," I said. "I didn't want to cut you down, but I had to. I hope you can understand." I was a proud boy as I walked along in the twilight of the evening. I felt so good. Even my sore hands had stopped hurting. What boy wouldn't have been proud? Hadn't my little hounds treed and killed their first coon? Along about then, I decided I was a full-fledged coon hunter. Nearing our house, I saw the whole family had come out on the porch. My sisters came running, staring wide-eyed at the dead coon. Laughing, Papa said, "Well, I see you got him."
"I sure did, Papa," I said.
I held the coon up for all to see. Mama took one look at the lifeless body and winced.
"Billy," she said, "when I heard that big tree fall, it scared me half to death. I didn't know but what it had fallen on you."
"Oh, Mama," I said, "I was safe. Why, I backed way off to one side. It couldn't have fallen on me." Mama just shook her head.
"I don't know," she said. "Sometimes I wonder if all mothers have to go through this."
"Come on," Papa said. "I'll help you skin it."
While we were tacking the hide on the smokehouse wall, I asked Papa if he had noticed any wind blowing that evening. He thought a bit and said, "No, I don't believe I did. I've been out all day, and I'm pretty sure I haven't noticed any wind. Why did you ask?"
"Oh, I don't know, Papa," I said. "But I thought something strange happened down in the bottoms this afternoon."
"I'm afraid I don't understand," said Papa. "What do you mean something strange happened?"
I told him about how my hands had gotten so sore I couldn't chop anymore and how I had asked for strength to finish the job.
"Well, what's so strange about that?" he asked.
"I don't know," I said. "But I didn't chop the big tree down. The wind blew it over."
"Why, that's nothing," Papa said. "I've seen that happen a lot of times."
"It wasn't just the wind," I said. "It was the way it blew. It didn't touch another tree in the bottoms. I know, because I looked around. The big tree was the only one touched by the wind. Do you think God heard my prayer? Do you think he helped me?"
Papa looked at the ground and scratched his head. In a sober voice, he said,
"I don't know, Billy. I'm afraid I can't answer that. You must remember, the big sycamore was the tallest tree in the bottoms. Maybe it was up there high enough to catch the wind where the others couldn't." "No, I'm afraid I can't help you there. You'll have to decide for yourself."
It wasn't hard for me to decide. I was firmly convinced that I had been helped.
Mama made me a cap out of my first coon hide.
I was as proud of it as Papa would have been if someone had given him a dozen Missouri mules. Mama said afterwards that she wished she hadn't made it for me because in some way wearing that cap must have affected my mind. I went coon crazy. I was out after ringtails every night. About the only time I didn't go hunting was when the weather was bad, and even then Mama all but had to hog-tie me. What wonderful nights they were. Running like a deer through the thick timber of the bottoms, tearing my way through stands of wild cane, climbing over drifts and jumping logs, running, screaming, and yelling, "Woo-wee! Get 'em, boy, get 'em!" following the voices of my little hounds. It wasn't too hard for a smart old coon to fool old Dan, but there were none that prowled the river banks that could fool my little Ann. As Grandpa had predicted, the price of coonskins jumped sky high. A good size hide was worth from $4 to $10, depending on the grade and quality. I kept the side of our smokehouse plastered with hides. Of course, I would spread them out a little to cover more space. I always stretched them on the side facing the road, never on the back side. I wanted everyone in the country to see them. The money earned from my furs was turned over to my father. I didn't care about it. I had what I wanted, my dogs. I supposed that Papa was saving it for something, because I never saw anything new turn up around our home. But like any young boy, I wasn't bothered by it, and I asked no questions. My whole life was wrapped up in my dogs. Everywhere I went, they went along. There was only one place I didn't want them to go with me, and that was to Grandpa's store. Other dogs were always there, and it seemed as if they all wanted to jump on old Dan. It got so about the only time I went to see my grandfather was when I had a bundle of fur to take to the store. This was always a problem. In every way I could, I would try to slip away from my dogs. Sometimes I swore that they could read my mind. It made no difference what I tried. I couldn't fool them. One time I was sure I had outsmarted them. The day before I was to make one of my trips, I took my furs out to the barn and hid them. The next morning I hung around the house for a while and then nonchalantly whistled my way out to the barn. I climbed up in the loft and peeked through a crack. I could see them lying in front of their doghouse. They weren't even looking my way. Taking my furs, I sneaked out through a back door, and walking like a tomcat, I made it to the timber. I climbed a small dogwood tree and looked back. They were still there and didn't seem to know what I'd done. Feeling just about as smart as Sherlock Holmes, I headed for the store. I was walking along, singing my lungs out, when they came tearing out of the underbrush, wriggling and twisting and tickled to death to be with me. At first I was mad, but one look at dancing little Ann and all was forgiven. I sat down on my bundle of fur and laughed till I hurt all over. I could scold them a little, but I could no more have whipped one of them than I could have kissed a girl. After all, a boy just doesn't whip his dogs. Grandpa always counted my furs carefully and marked something down on a piece of paper. I'd never seen him do this with other hunters, and it got the best of my curiosity. One day, while he was writing, I asked him, "Why do you do that, Grandpa?" He looked at me over his glasses and said, kind of sharp, "Never mind. I have my reasons." When Grandpa talked to me like that, I didn't push things any farther. Besides, it didn't make any difference to me if he marked on every piece of paper in the store. I always managed to make my trips on Saturdays, as that was Coon Hunter's Day. I didn't have to stand around on the outside of the circle anymore and listen to the coon hunters. I'd get right up in the middle and say my piece with the rest of them. I didn't have to tell any whoppers, for some of the things my dogs did were almost unbelievable anyhow. Oh, I guess I did make things a little bigger than they actually were, but I never did figure a coon hunter told honest-to-goodness lies. He just kind of stretched things a little. I could hold those coon hunters spellbound with some of my hunting tales. Grandpa would never say anything while I was telling my stories. He just puttered around the store with a silly little grin on his face. Once in a while, when I got too far off the beaten path, he would come around and cram a bar of soap in my pocket. My face would get all red. I'd cut my story short, fly out the door, and head for home. The coon hunters were always kidding me about my dogs. Some of the remarks I heard made me fighting mad. "I never saw hounds so small, but I guess they are hounds. At least they look like it."
"I don't believe little Ann is half as smart as he says she is. She's so little, those old coons think she's a rabbit. I'll bet she sneaks right up on them before they realize she's a dog."
Some of these nights, big old coon's going to carry her off to his den and raise some little coon puppies.
I always took their kidding with a smile on my face, but it made my blood boil like the water in Mama's tea kettle. I had one way of shutting them up.
Let's all go in the store, I'd say, and see who has the most hides in there.
It was true that my dogs were small, especially little Anne. She could walk under an ordinary hound. In fact, she was a regular midget. If it had not been for her long ears, no one could have told that she was a hound. Her actions weren't those of a hunting hound. She was constantly playing. She would play with our chickens and young calves, with a piece of paper or a corn cob. What my little girl lacked in size, she made up in sweetness. She could make friends with a tomcat. Old Dan was just the opposite. He strutted around with a belligerent and tough attitude. Although he wasn't a tall dog, he was heavy. His body was long and his chest broad and thick. His legs were short, big, and solid. The muscles in his body were hard and knotty. When he walked, they would twist and jerk under the skin. He was a friendly dog. There were no strangers to him. He loved everyone.
Yet he was a strange dog. He would not hunt with another hound other than little Ann or another hunter, not even my father.
The strangest thing about old Dan was that he would not hunt, even with me, unless little Ann was with him. I found this out the first night I tried it. Little Ann had cut the pad of her right foot on a sharp, jagged flint rock. It was a nasty cut. I made a little boot of leather and put it on her wounded foot. To keep her from following me, I locked her in the corn crib. Two nights later, I decided to take old Dan hunting for a while. He followed me down to the river bottoms and disappeared in the thick timber. I waited and waited for him to strike a trail. Nothing happened. After about 2 hours, I called to him. He didn't come. I called and called. Disgusted, I gave up and went home. Coming up through the barn lot, I saw him rolled up in a ball on the ground in front of the corn crib. I immediately understood. I walked over and opened the door. He jumped up in the crib, smelled little Ann's foot, twisted around in the shucks, and lay down by her side. As he looked at me, I read this message in his friendly gray eyes. You could have done this a long time ago. I never did know if little Ann would hunt by herself or not. I am sure she would have, for she was a smart and understanding dog, but I never tried to find out. Little Ann was my sister's pet. They rubbed and scratched and petted her. They would take her down to the creek and give her baths. She loved it all. If Mama wanted a chicken caught, she would call little Ann. She would run the chicken down and hold it with her paws until Mama came. Not one feather would be harmed. Mama tried old Dan once. Before she got the chicken, there wasn't much left but the feathers.
By some strange twist of nature, little Ann was destined to go through life without being a mother. Perhaps it was because she was stunted in growth, or maybe because she was the runt in a large litter. That may have had something to do with it.
During the fur season, November through February, I was given complete freedom from work. Many times when I came home, the sun was high in the sky. After each hunt, I always took care of my dogs. The flint rocks and saw briars were hard on their feet. With a bottle of peroxide and a can of salve, I would doctor their wounds. I never knew what to expect from old Dan. I never saw a coon hound so determined, or one that could get into so many predicaments. More than one time, it would have been the death of him if it hadn't been for smart little Ann. One night, not long after I had entered the bottoms, my dogs struck the trail of an old boar coon. He was a smart old fellow and had a sack full of tricks. He crossed the river time after time. Finally, swimming to the middle and staying in the swift current, he swam downstream. Knowing he would have to come out somewhere, my dogs split up. Old Dan took the right side, little Ann worked the other side. I came out of the bottoms onto a gravel bar and stood and watched them in the moonlight. Little Ann worked downriver, and then she came up. I saw her when she passed me, going up the bank, sniffing and searching for the trail. She came back to me. I patted her head, scratched her ears, and talked to her. She kept staring across the river to where old Dan was searching for the trail. She waded in and swam across to help him. I knew that the coon had not come out of the river on her side. If he had, she would have found the trail. I walked up to a riffle, pulled off my shoes, and waded across. My dogs worked the riverbank up and down. They circled far out into the bottoms. I could hear the loud snuffing of old Dan. He was bewildered and mad. I was getting a thrill from it all, as I had never seen them fooled like this. Old Dan gave up on his side, piled into the river, and swam across to the side little Ann had worked. I knew that it was useless for him to do that. I was on the point of giving up, calling them to me and going elsewhere to hunt, when I heard the bawl of little Ann. I couldn't believe what I heard. She wasn't bawling on a trail. She was sounding the tree bark. I hurried down the bank. There was a loud splash. I saw old Dan swimming back. By this time, little Ann was really singing a song. In the bright moonlight, I could see old Dan clearly. His powerful front legs were churning the water. Then I saw a sight that makes a hunter's heart swell with pride. Still swimming, old Dan raised his head high out of the water and bawled. He couldn't wait until he reached the bank to tell little Ann he was coming. From far out in the river, he told her. Reaching the shallows, he plowed out of the river onto a sandbar, not even taking time to shake the water from his body. Again, he raised his head and bawled and tore out down the bank. In a trot, I followed, whooping to let them know I was coming. Before I reached the tree, old Dan's deep voice was making the timber shake. The tree was a large birch standing right on the bank of the river. The swift current had eaten away the footing, causing it to lean. The lower branches of the tree dangled in the water. I saw how the smart old coon had pulled his trick. Coming in toward the bank from midstream, he had caught the dangling limbs and climbed up. Exhausted from the long swim, he stayed there in the birch, thinking he had outsmarted my dogs. I couldn't understand how little Ann had found him. It was impossible to fall the tree toward the bottoms. It was too much off balance. I did the next best thing. I cut a long elder switch. Unbuckling one of my suspenders, I tied it to the end and climbed the tree. The coon was sitting in a fork of a limb. Taking my switch, I whopped him a good one, and out he came. He sailed out over the river. With a loud splash, he hit the water and swam for the other side. My dogs jumped off the bank after him. They were no match against his expert swimming. On reaching the other bank, he ran downriver. Climbing down out of the tree, I picked up my axe and lantern and trotted down to another riffle and waded across. I could tell by the bawling of my dogs they were close to the coon. He would have to climb a tree or be caught on the ground. All at once, their voices stopped. I stood still and waited for them to bawl treed. Nothing happened. Thinking the coon had taken to the river again, I waited to give them time to reach the opposite bank. I waited and waited. I could hear nothing. By then I knew he had not crossed over. I thought perhaps they had caught him on the ground. I hurried on. I came to a point where a slough of crystal clear water ran into the river. On the other side was a bluff. I could hear one of my dogs over there. As I watched and waited, I heard a dog jump in the water. It was little Ann. She swam across and came up to me. Staying with me for just a second, she jumped in the slough and swam back to the other side. I could hear her sniffing and whining. I couldn't figure out where old Dan was. By squatting down and holding the lantern high over my head, I could dimly see the opposite bank. Little Ann was running up and down. I noticed she always stayed in one place of about 25 yards, never leaving that small area. She ran down to the water's edge and stared out into the slough. The horrible thought came that old Dan had drowned. I knew a big coon was capable of drowning a dog in water by climbing on his head and forcing him under. As fast as I could run, I circled the slough, climbed up over the bluff, and came down to where little Ann was. She was hysterical, running up and down the bank and whining. I tied my lantern on a long pole, held it out over the water, and looked for old Dan's body. I could see clearly in the clear spring waters, but I couldn't see my dog anywhere. I sat down on the bank, buried my face in my hands, and cried. I was sure he was gone. Several minutes passed. And all that time, little Ann had never stopped running here and there along the bank. She kept sniffing and whining. I heard when she started digging. I looked around. She was 10 feet from the water's edge. I got up and went over to her. She was digging in a small hole about the size of a big apple. It was the air hole for a muskrat den. I pulled little Ann away from the hole, knelt down, and put my ear to it. I could hear something and feel a vibration in the ground. It was an eerie sound and seemed to be coming from far away. I listened. Finally, I understood what the noise was. It was the voice of old Dan. Little Anne had opened the hole up enough with her digging so his voice could be heard faintly. In some way, he had gotten into that old muskrat den. I knew that down under the bank in the water, the entrance to the den could be found. Rolling up my sleeve, I tried to find it with my hand. I had no luck. It was too far down. There was only one